ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हतं कुवलयापिदं दृष्ट्वाथावापि दुर्जयो कंसो मनस्यापि तदा भृशम् उद्विविचे नृपा। King Kamsa saw that Kuvalayapida was dead, and the two brothers were invincible. He was overwhelmed with anxiety. O king, arrayed with variegated ornaments, garlands, and garments, just like a pair of excellently costumed actors, the two mighty armed lords shone splendidly in the arena. Indeed, they overpowered the minds of all onlookers with their effulgences. O king, as the citizens of the city and the people from outlying districts gazed upon those two supreme personalities from their seats in the galleries, the force of the people's happiness caused their eyes to open wide and their faces to blossom. They drank in the vision of the Lord's faces without becoming satiated. The people seemed to be drinking Krishna and Balaram with their eyes, licking them with their tongues, smelling them with their nostrils, and embracing them with their arms. Reminded of the Lord's beauty, character, charm, and bravery, the members of the audience began describing these features to one another according to what they had seen and heard. Port. Naturally, those who assembled in Mathura for the wrestling festival had heard the latest news of Krishna's and Balaram's adventures in the city. How the lords had broken the sacrificial bow, defeated the police, and killed the elephant Kuvalayapida. And now that the people were seeing Krishna and Balaram enter the arena, their greatest expectations were confirmed. Krishna is the embodiment of all beauty, fame, and opulence, and therefore those assembled in the wrestling arena became fully satisfied by glorifying what they had heard of him and now were seeing.
Welcome to Radha Gopinath Temple. It's my honor and fortune to be with you today. We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 43, entitled Krishna Kills the Elephant, texts 18 through 22. Background music is... The residents of Mathura, as Shukadev Goswami is explaining here, are first seeing Krishna and Balaram. They had already, many of them, been attracted and fallen in love with Krishna just by hearing about him. As we read in earlier chapters, the Brahmins' wives actually never saw Krishna. But just by hearing the Brijabasis, the neighboring ladies of Vrindavan, speak about Krishna's form, his pastimes, his love, they completely gave their hearts to him. They irresistibly surrendered their lives to him. And it was their great longing to be with him. And then Krishna called for them. Not only did he call them, but he called them to devotional service, to please him in such a simple way. He didn't send a message to the Brahmins' wives to establish temples or to attract tens and thousands of people to their katas. He didn't establish them. He didn't invite them to give donations of crores of rupees. He just sent the message that I'm hungry. Please bring some food. And they were so eager to do so. Even at the risk of their social, physical, emotional status within society, they ran to offer Krishna their love in the form of some pots of bhoga or food. And because of their great anticipation, their lolyam, their greed to see Krishna, their greed to serve Krishna, their greed to please Krishna, their hearts were receptive to receive his full mercy and receive his love. Where does our love for Krishna come from? It comes from Krishna's love for us. Because Krishna is the cause of all causes, sarva karana karanam, the source of everything that exists, janmadya shayataha. And because of Krishna's unconditional, unlimited love for every living being, which is manifesting through his Ladini Shakti, Sri Radha, that is the power in which we reciprocate with Krishna's love. And in return, Krishna reciprocates with our love. And then we reciprocate with Krishna's love. And this is an eternal Nitya Leela. Nitya Leela Nitya Dham, Sri Vrindavan Dham. This is Vrindavan, where there is eternal loving reciprocation. The devotees are infinitely attracted to Krishna's love and they reciprocate with their love, and then Krishna becomes indebted, subordinate to the love of his devotees, and reciprocates. And it continues in this way forever. There's no stagnancy in this spiritual world. In bhakti, when the heart is pure, we realize an ever-increasing, unlimited reciprocation. So similar to that, many of the very pious and pure-hearted devotees of Mathura, because after all, Kamsa may have been very demoniac, and he had his associates, but the people of Mathura were Yadus and Vrishnis. They were natural devotees. Many had very, very loving hearts. And they heard about Krishna. And they heard about Krishna's coming into Mathura. And now with great eagerness, so many were coming to see him. This wrestling arena, which Kamsa had organized, was filled with people from all directions. And now they are coming to see Krishna. So let us explain, or let us meditate upon Krishna's coming to Mathura, just to bring us up to date with today's verse, with your permission. You don't sound very eager. Okay. Thank you. Kamsa wanted to kill Krishna. Because of his own ego and his profound attachments to his wealth, to his power, to his greed, he saw Krishna as a threat. Kamsa had the strength of 10,000 elephants, each of his arms. That was his power. And he didn't get that power from going to a gym. You can't get that power, no matter what type of hoardings show people with power on the roadways of Mumbai. He got it through practicing yoga. Because yoga is a science of connecting with higher realms of existence. Material existence, gross, subtle, and ultimately it's meant to transcend material existence and connect directly to the power of God's grace. But some people, they don't get to that last part, simply because they don't want to. They want the gifts of God without God. So like Hiranyakashipu, Ravana, Kumbhakarna, Hiranyaksha, all these types of people, he performed tremendous tapasya and yoga. And he gained so much strength that he could literally conquer the world. And he could even have the demigods, the devatas, fear him. Even the devas could not stand before him. And he had already subjugated the greatest asuras, or similar type of mystic demons, to be under his rule. Like Putana, Trinavarta, Aga, Vatsa, Pralamba, Keshi, Arista. They were all servants of Kamsa. And each of them went to Vrindavan, and each of them Krishna liberated effortlessly. Putana, Krishna was an infant child, only a couple days old. Now for you mothers and fathers, brahmacharis, I don't know how much you understand the technicalities. But you see little babies when they're 1 or 2 days old. What could they do? Yes? Vrindavan Rani Devi or some other gynecologist can give us details. But they're helpless. They're little fingers. I've gone and seen. They're little fingers. They look, if you breathe on them, they will break. But yet Krishna with those little fingers went, and Putana broke. And when Krishna was only a few months old, Shakatasura, when he was just on his first birthday, practically, Trinavarta. So Kamsa was constantly accumulating more and more anxiety. very instructive. He had such mystic powers, and he was also extremely learned. He wasn't just like a dull-headed, strong person. He was incredibly brilliant intellectually. He was a scholar in his own right. But he couldn't free himself of anxiety. As Srimad Bhagavatam tells, that even if one conquers the entire universe, one cannot be satisfied. One cannot be free from anxiety unless one controls one's own mind and senses. So this is real wealth. True wealth, from a realistic spiritual perspective, is not what we accumulate. Fame, power, wealth, skills, longevity of physical life. Because all these things are only, we strive for them because we're under the impression they'll give us happiness. Real wealth is happiness. Happiness that is not subjected to the ever-changing conditions of this world. Because whoever we are, whatever position, dukalayama shashvatam, this world is full of uncertainties. Honor, dishonor, pleasure, pain, happiness, distress, health, disease, fame and infamy, the life and the birth and the death of loved ones. And oftentimes these dualities are out of our control. So real happiness is when it is transcendental to all of the changes in this world. Where our human nature feels for all of these things and does the best we can. But because we're connected to the Atma, the Jiva, the soul, and we're connected to Krishna, the Paramatma, the Supreme Soul, we deal with the things of this world from a perspective of service, rather than from the perspective of trying to be the enjoyer. Because of the lack of fulfillment inside. So this is Kamsa's situation. He was so frustrated. Ultimately, he sent Akrura to invite Krishna to come to Mathura. And Kamsa was so demoniac. He also let Nanda Maharaj and the others come. Let them see Krishna die. This was his morbid state of consciousness. And he was convinced that it could be done. Akrura was a great devotee. That's why Kamsa sent him. Because he couldn't just send anyone. If a devotee asks Krishna to come, then Krishna will come. Kamsa was so intelligent. And Kamsa gave Akrura a brand new chariot just to encourage Akrura to be enthusiastic. Yes. But the world is a mirror of our own consciousness. So Kamsa is seeing everything and everyone according to his way of thinking. But Akrura, it is said in Gita, Yanisha Saravabhutana, that what is day for an ordinary person is night for a great devotee. And what is night for a common person, materialistic, is the time of awakening for self-realized souls. So Akrura was saying, this is my opportunity to be with Krishna and he'll understand why I'm coming. Externally, he's coming for the purpose of trying to kill Krishna, but internally, he's coming to surrender his heart with love.
And ultimately, we spoke last time I was here, I think, about the condition of the Brijbasis, the inhabitants of Vrindavan, as Akura was taking Krishna away. And at that time, the gopis, in the ecstasy of imminent separation from Krishna, they were praising the good fortune of the residents of Mathura. And what we have read in the pastimes of Krishna in Mathura, everything the gopis predicted is what happened. Because they know what love for Krishna is. And they know what happens when people connect to Krishna's love. Srila Prabhupada is a resident of Vrindavan. He was living at Sevakunj, Radha Damodar, where Krishna performs his eternal Rasa Lila. He knows the sweetness of Krishna. He knows what happens when Krishna touches one's heart. He knows what happens when people sincerely take Krishna and Radha's names. This was his conviction. Beyond all material, inconceivable impossibilities of his mission, he understood wherever he may go in this world, if people taste Krishna, their hearts will transform. And real faith is developed according to how we actually experience Krishna. When we directly experience Krishna, then we have such faith in what could happen to anyone and everybody who makes that connection. So many people were telling Srila Prabhupada, you cannot go there and be successful. The Western world, these people are malechas and they're yavanas and they're so many things. And besides that, it's very cold. But Srila Prabhupada was tasting the sweetness of Krishna in his name. He had the order of his guru, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and he had his experience. In his prayers of Jaladutta, he writes that Krishna, if people just connect to you, if you bestow your mercy upon them, they will be transformed and happy. So he left Vrindavan. He went even beyond Mathura. And he established new Mathura and new Vrindavan and so many things. That was Prabhupada's face, based on his realization, his experience. And he told us not only to give Krishna to others, but to experience Krishna ourselves. Through our sadhana, through our satsang, through our devotion. When Srila Prabhupada was asked, what can we do to repay you? He asked only two things. He said, just accept what I've given you and share it with others. So the gopis understood what would happen to the pious people of Mathura when they experienced Krishna. And that's what happened. Akura brought, after bathing in the Yamuna and seeing the spiritual world, Krishna was brought by Akura in the outskirts of Mathura. Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men had already set up a little camp, and they were waiting for Krishna. Because when Nanda Maharaj and some of the gopas, the cowherd boy friends of Krishna, originally they were supposed to go with Akrura. Because we've already read Akrura left first. And they were following. But they saw Akrura was going very fast. So Nanda Maharaj and his people, they decided to take a shortcut, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Because they're Brijabasis. They're farmers. They know all the shortcuts. And meanwhile, Akrura, when he went to take his bath in Yamuna and he saw the spiritual world, was in ecstasy, and then Krishna and Balaram went to take, they were delayed. So Nanda Maharaj and the gopas arrived before. And when Krishna saw them, he got off the chariot and wanted to be with his friends and his father. And he told Akrura, you go home and you enter Mathura and I'll come later with my friends because I want to be with my friends and my family. And Akrura, he was begging Krishna, how can I leave you here? How could I go alone? I won't say anything to Kamsa. I won't even let anybody know that you're here. Let's just go to my house. And there I will serve you very nicely. And then I'll bring you. And he said it with such devotion. And Krishna accepted his devotion. Well, he said, yes, I will, but I will come to your house after. He said, let me be with my family. And you go ahead and you could tell Kamsa everything, that your mission is successful, and I will come tomorrow. So Krishna and his Akrura left, and Krishna was with the Brijabasis. And then he and Balaram, surrounded by some of the little cowherd boyfriends, decided to enter Mathura themselves. And when they came, they first came to a shop where there was a washerman. This particular washerman was washing and preparing the clothes for Kamsa, the king. Krishna Balaram and their friends, they knew this. But Krishna wanted to give him a chance. So Krishna entered the little washerman's home, his shop, and said, please give me nice clothes. That's all. And if you give me nice clothes, I will give you so much happiness. The washerman, here he was given the opportunity to render personal loving service to the Supreme Absolute Truth, the personality of Godhead. The all-attractive Lord was standing right before him as Krishna and Balaram. This is the power of Maya. Can you imagine the beauty of Krishna's form standing right before you, smiling, asking for some cloth? But because of his association with Kamsa, he was not able to appreciate Krishna. Similarly, Krishna is not different than his name. How is it that we're chanting Krishna's name and we're not feeling happiness sometimes? Naham prakasha sarvasya, Krishna tells in Gita. By the power of Yoga Maya, we are covered. Yoga Maya is expansion of Mahamaya. He became angry. He said, what
impudent, foolish children you are. These clothes belong to Kamsa, the king. Who are you? My king is a great majestic ruler. And you're just coming out of the forest? Covered with all, spending the day in the dust and the dirt with cows? And you are asking for the king's garments? For this audacity, you should be arrested, punished, and killed. He was very angry. He was screaming at Krishna and Balaram. So Krishna, with the tips of his little tender fingers, he touched the washerman's head, and it was separated from its body. Hare Krishna. He was liberated. He had already lost his head, so Krishna was... Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains in Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat that this washerman, in his previous lives, thousands of births, he worshipped the Supreme Lord with the benediction to see him. Krishna actually came to him to fulfill his benediction. Can you imagine? This person did austerities. He practiced very difficult yoga with the ambition to see God. So Krishna fulfilled. Yes, you have paid the price. Now you can see me. But even lifetimes and lifetimes for this purpose, because of his association with Kamsa and Kamsa's people, he couldn't recognize the very fulfillment of his desires. Yayatamam prapadyante. Krishna reveals himself according to how we perceive him and we approach him. So he was liberated. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains in this way. That in the association of sincere devotees with the proper attitude, when we see Krishna, we become happy. Otherwise, Krishna tells in Gita, for those who love me, bhaktyatvanani yashakya aham evam vidorajana. For those with devotion, I reveal myself just like I'm standing before you, Arjuna. And they love me, and they feel my love. But without that devotion, Kamsa was seeing Krishna. The washermen were seeing Krishna, but they were not feeling happy. They were feeling miserable. They were feeling fear. But Krishna gave that washerman liberation anyway. And then Krishna put on the clothes. Very good lesson. Krishna's going to take everything we have anyway. This is a lesson for all of us. It's not just a washerman 5,000 years ago. Everything we have, Krishna's going to take it. He's either going to take it when we offer it to him with love, or he's going to take it at the time of death. What can you take with you at the time of death? Only your karma. Nothing else. Manaso deho geho jokya chumor. Bhaktivinoda Thakur prays, my Lord, my body, my home, my family, my wealth, my abilities,
Everything I have is yours. I surrender it all to you because it's yours.
You see, surrender is not some very, very mystical conception. Surrendering to Krishna is just being honest. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram. Krishna's the proprietor of everything that exists. The intelligence of the intelligent, the abilities. He's Lakshminath. He's the Lord of Lakshmi. Whatever we have is his. Surrender is just reciprocation. Krishna, this is yours. Let me please you. And by pleasing Krishna, samsiddhir haritoshanam, we attain the ultimate happiness, ever-increasing ecstasy. So either we could do that, or Krishna's going to take it away anyway, as he did for the washerman. And he put on the clothes. He put on Kamsa's clothes. And at that time, there was a weaver man. And he came, and he had nice cloth that he had personally made himself. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he had some bamboo mechanisms that he would be making these nice handmade clothes. And he, the best clothes he had, he came to where Krishna was and offered them to Krishna. And Krishna bestowed all the perfections of life. You will have everything you desire in this life. And when you pass from this world, you will come back to my abode. So the weaver man was very happy. Now Krishna has nice clothes. Vrindavan, he was cowherd boy. Now he's wearing Kamsa clothes. And he's very beautiful in whatever he wears. And he took the clothes and started giving them to all his cowherd boys too. They came to the home of Sudama. Sudama was a very simple man. He would grow flowers and make malas or garlands. Now, Mumbai is something like Mathura, in the sense it's a city. As far as the organization and the aesthetics, it's completely different. But it is a city. So if you go to a malawala, a person who makes garlands, they're just very simple people, usually with not much academic education. But they're very good at making garlands. So this was Sudama. He was just a very simple person with a family who made his living by making garlands. And Krishna went to his home. As soon as Krishna came, unlike the washerman, he was happy to see Krishna. He was happy to see Krishna because he was eager to serve Krishna. It's this service attitude that gives joy to Krishna consciousness. To whatever degree we're eager to serve, we're going to find happiness in bhakti. To whatever degree we have selfishness, we're not going to find that happiness. So Sudama invited Krishna inside. He washed Krishna's feet. He offered Krishna a sitting place. He offered Krishna his life. You are my supreme beloved Lord. You are my everything. I'm so grateful you've come to my home. Such a benediction. The water that washed Krishna's feet. What is the quality of Krishna's lotus feet? Bali Maharaj, who was the king of the universe, he attained ultimate perfection. Millions of times greater than the whole conquering of the universe, he found happiness when Krishna placed his feet on Bali's head. And the Ganges, Mother Ganga, she has the power to purify and liberate countless living beings forever because it has been touched by Krishna's lotus feet. And that same Ganga, because it has been touched and blessed by Krishna's feet, Lord Shiva is eager to receive it on the top of his head. And all the children, or the forefathers of Maharaj Sagar, they were liberated by the touch of that Ganga water that had been touched by Krishna's feet. And Krishna's lotus feet were now in the home of Sudama. And the water that washed it were now the greatest treasure of Sudama. He offered everything he had in his life to Krishna. How may I serve you? And Krishna didn't ask for anything specifically. He said to Sudama, in whatever way you like. But because of his sincerity, Sudama knew exactly what Krishna wanted, without even being told. And this is an important principle to understand. Krishna doesn't want us to be something else than what we are. He just wants us to offer what we can offer with love. Sudama knew how to make flower garlands. All Krishna wanted was a flower garland. In the Gita, Krishna tells that whoever you are, whether you're a man or whether you're a woman or whether you're a Brahmin or a Kshatriya or a Vaishya or a Shudra or a Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas, or whether you don't fit in any of those categories, whether you're Jagai and Madhai, or whether you're Kolavecha Sridhar, or whether you're Sarvabhoma Bhattacharya or King Prataparudra, whether you're the Brahmin's wives offering some food, or whether that fruit seller who was a untouchable woman from social standards, she was just living in the jungle, no education. She just came out of the forest with some fruit and she offered Krishna her fruit because that's all she knew what to do. Krishna didn't ask her to recite the Vishnu Sahasranam. If you know how to do that, then that's what you should offer to Krishna. If you know how, he didn't ask her to, you know, fight against the Kurus. If you know how to do that, that's what you should be doing. She just knew how to pick fruits, so she gave Krishna fruits. So whether we're great Brahmins, or whether we're great warriors, or whether we're great business people, or whether we're great ascetics or yogis, or whether we're just making little garlands, if we just offer what we are able to do the best we can with devotion, we attain the same goal. And this is how Krishna consciousness, true bhakti, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is equal to everyone. And Sudama offered this as a prayer to Krishna. That as the super soul in everyone's heart, you know everyone's intentions. And even though you reciprocate with the love of your devotee, you are equal to all living beings. whoever we are, whatever we can do, Krishna will accept it. And in that accepting, patram pushpam palam toyam, Krishna tells in Gita, offer me even a little fruit, water, flower. I will accept it if it's offered with love. So he took one of his, he took his very best, most fragrant garland and offered it to Krishna. And he wasn't thinking, Krishna, I'm giving this to you. This is the essence of bhakti. He was thinking, Krishna, you are so kind, you are accepting this from me. And this is how we should think. Not Krishna, look what I'm doing for you. Srila Prabhupada gives the common example that when you take a handful of water from Mother Ganga and you say, Mother Ganga, I offer this water to you. Do you think, you're not supposed to think, Mother Ganga, see what I am giving you. I'm giving you a handful of water that I just took from you. Even though there's billions and trillions of quadrillions of handful of waters in your current, I am giving you a handful of water. If you offer in that mood, there's not much reciprocation. Something. Just because you're in the Ganga, you'll get something. But the idea is, Mother Ganga, you are so kind. You are so merciful. Just to perfect my life, you are accepting this offering. And that was Sudama's mood. Greatest causeless mercy is Krishna, you are willing to accept this garland. And he offered the garland. And you see, if you want to please Krishna, you also have to please those who Krishna loves. He didn't just say, okay, Krishna, now I've given to you. He understood Krishna's heart. And then he gave another garland to Balaram. And then all the cowherd boys, he gave them all nice garlands. Not just meager little a thread with a couple flowers on it. He gave every one of his flower garlands the best of everything. There was nothing left. He gave them all to Krishna's friends. And because he pleased Krishna and he pleased Krishna's friends, his devotees, Krishna was samsiddhir haritosh. Krishna said, because I am so happy with you, I will give you everything and anything. Just ask for any benediction. Now, Sudama is very poor financially. Krishna came to his house. It was just a little house. Can you imagine if Krishna is pleased with you? He just gave Krishna practically everything he had. And Krishna saying, I'll give you anything. Sudama asked for three things. This is the highlight of today's talk, so please listen carefully. Of course, there'll be more highlights too. Sudama asked, please grant me unconditional love to serve you and please you. Second, allow me to forever have friendship with your devotees. Third blessing, grant me genuine compassion for all living beings. He wanted to love Krishna so that Krishna would be pleased through his service. He wanted deep friendship with Krishna's devotees, and he wanted compassion for all beings.
And these three principles are the highest aspirations for every devotee. To love Krishna, to be friends with Krishna's devotees, and to be an instrument of Krishna's compassions for all living beings. He didn't ask for anything for himself. He only asked for what he could give. And Krishna was so pleased that even though he didn't ask for anything else, Krishna gave it to him. Krishna said, I will give you any desire you have in your life will be fulfilled. I will give you a long life. I will give you perfect health. Not only for you, but for your whole family. I will give you great wealth. I will give you prosperity. I will give you great happiness in every level, materially, emotionally, throughout your whole life. And when you leave this world, you will come back home, back to God. He didn't ask for these things, but he got them anyway. And this is the principle of devotional service. When we want to love Krishna, be friends with his devotees, and be an instrument of compassion to others, we don't have to ask for anything else. If we ask for those things with a genuine and sincere heart, Krishna knows everything else. Whatever he gives or doesn't give is perfect. We're happy. In the Sri Sampradaya, one of the Alwars, his name is Vishnu Chitar. It describes how he was a Brahmin. And when he was young, he was hearing Srimad Bhagavatam Katha. And he happened to hear this story about Sutama, who was just a simple flower person. He just grew flowers and made garlands. And how his only aspiration in life was to love Krishna, to be friends with Krishna's devotees, and to be compassionate to others. And what Krishna gave him. This moved Vishnu Chitar so much that he decided for the rest of his life he will just grow flowers and make garlands and offer them to his murti of Krishna. Vatashayi. His form of Krishna or Vishnu, he had a murti, and this murti is Krishna who was laying on a banyan tree leaf in the water of devastation, sucking on his toe when he was a little baby. So he had this mood. And he was living a very, very simple life. He didn't go to school anymore. He just grew flowers. He wasn't very educated. But he had such love. Just lived in a little village year after year. That's how much he was inspired by one time hearing this particular passage of Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati explains every syllable of every word, of every verse, of every canto of Srimad Bhagavatam has the power to totally transform our lives if we hear it with receptivity, with a desire to serve. So this is the power that we find. We have heard the story of Sudama. We have heard the stories of gopis and gopas and Prahlad and Dhruva and Ambarish. How are we being transformed? When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was speaking to Devananda Pandit, who was the greatest academic scholar of the Srimad Bhagavatam at the time, he asked, how should I explain the Bhagavatam? How should I understand it? And Lord Chaitanya said, every verse
is simply explaining unconditional love for Krishna. That is the Bhagavatam. It is Amalam Puranam. So by hearing this story, he became so transformed. Not just theoretically. Just lived a simple life. Grew some flowers. Offered them to the Lord. One day the king who lived some distance away in the kingdom of South India, he, in association with a great sadhu, understood that he must find out the goal of life. And he proclaimed to his ministers, "I want to know what is the goal of life. And I want to learn. I want to find a guru who is the most exalted, learned person in my whole kingdom." So they decided to have a debate. And they called the greatest scholars, the greatest Brahmins, the greatest yogis from all directions to come for this debate. And whoever wins will be the guru of the king. Can you imagine that? So, in a dream, Lord Vishnu tells Vishnu Chittar, "You should go. You should enter that debate." Huh? He was invited. He said to Vishnu, "How am I going to debate? These are scholars. They've been studying shastras all their lives. They're the teachers of everyone. They're gurus. I just know how to grow flowers and string them together. That's all I know." And Lord Krishna told him, "You just go and I'll supply whatever is required." This is the teaching of Gita. Krishna tells you, "Just surrender to me. I will preserve whatever you have. I will supply whatever you lack." He had such faith. All right. And he went there, and he's just, everybody else is, you know, he's just kind of wearing his gardening clothes. He comes to the arena. People are speaking so many high topics. And then he speaks. He's asked to speak. And when he spoke, he spoke about pure devotional service with such authority, with such logic, with such shastric reference that every one of the Brahmins surrendered. "He is the greatest." And the king himself accepted. "This is my guru." So they had a grand procession to show that this is now the guru of the king. He is victorious over all others. He was so humble. He was just going along with whatever Krishna was doing with him. When we're successful, we should be like Vishnu Chittar, not just see what I have done. Just see what Krishna's doing with me. This is quite wonderful. Whether Krishna pushes us down or brings us up, whatever Krishna's doing, we're just his servant. And as he was riding with the big procession, with the king and all the great ministers and kingdom glorifying him, Vishnu himself wanted to see. He came down on Garuda. Nobody else could see, but he could see. And when Vishnu was coming down, Vishnu Chittar was looking up, tears flowing from his eyes, tears of love. "My Lord is coming down into the material world." Krishna wanted to see his devotee being glorified in this way. And he had such love, Vatsalya Ras, parental love. He was feeling anxiety that Krishna, you're coming to the material world just to see me, but this material world, there's so much envy, and there's so much greed, and there's so much selfish lust, and there's so much anger, and so much pollution of minds and pollutions of hearts. This is no place for you, my Lord. I'm praying. Please don't be in any disturbance or anxiety by being here in this material existence. Like Vasudeva or Devaki or Nanda and Yashoda, Kausalya, Dasarath, even though they knew that the Lord was the Lord, Nanda and Yashoda didn't really know that, but inside, deep down, they knew more than that. Still, out of their love, they were fearing for Krishna. The other day was Ram Navami, when Vishwamitra Muni asked Dasarath for Ram to bring to the forest to fight against Marichi and Subahu, these Rakshasas who were associates of Ravana. Dasarath, how could he? He's just a little boy. He's hardly 16 years old, and you're asking him, I'll bring all my armies. But when he heard that they were associates of Ravana, Dasarath understood, myself and all my armies cannot stand before the associates of Ravana. What to speak of my little son? He was in great anguish. I can't send him. But Vasishtha Muni said, your son, he's Ram. But anyways, Vishwamitra Muni will protect him. He's very powerful. So this is the mood of love. So Vishnu Chitar, instead of thinking, how great I am, not only have I defeated all the great pundits, and not only am I now the guru of the whole kingdom, but now Vishnu's coming just to see me and to encourage me. He was feeling, oh Krishna, I'm feeling so sad that you're coming to this, you're so pure and clean and gentle, and you're coming to this rough, dirty world of material existence. I'm praying that there is no disturbance for you. And after becoming the king, you know what Vishnu Chitar did? He could have stayed and been in a palace and had people worshiping him everywhere. He just did his service, and then he went back to his home and started digging the ground and planting flowers and watering flowers and offering the garlands to Krishna. And one day, when he was in his garden and he was tilling the tulsi plants, from the ground next to a tulsi, he saw a beautiful little baby girl and picked her up and accepted her as his own daughter and raised her and gave her the name Undal, the great Undal, the female Alwar, who is worshipped even today, so many thousands of years later, she is worshipped by tens and millions of people in her temples, not only in South India, but all over the world. And from her earliest childhood, with the mood of the gopi's love, she loved Krishna. And her father he would go out to the gardens and grow the flowers. Then he would make a garland. Then he would put it in a little room, a special room, later at the proper time to offer to Krishna, the deity. And every day his little daughter, when her father was away doing his gardening, she would take that garland, which was bhoga, and put it around her own neck and wear it. And then she'd go in front of a mirror and see herself, how beautiful she was with the garland. And she would kind of dance with the garland in front of the mirror. And then before her father would come, she would take the garland off and put it on the tray as if she wasn't there. And the father would come and pick up that garland and offer it, place it upon Vishnu. But one day, he happened to come a little early, and without her seeing, he saw her with the garland on her neck, kind of talking to nobody and looking at herself, and she looked so happy. She was just a little girl. She was just getting to marriageable age, and he said, "Anda, what are you doing? This is for Krishna. You do not wear Krishna's garland until after Krishna." He very lovingly chastised her to teach her the proper spirit of devotion. She didn't say anything. But then the next day, he came with a garland. And Vishnu appeared to him and said, "Why yesterday you didn't give me a garland?" He said, "I couldn't, because my daughter Anda was wearing the garland. So it was not offerable." And Vishnu said to Vishnu Chittar, he said, "The reason I am so happy with your garlands is because Anda has worn them. She gives so much, her devotion gives such fragrance and tenderness and pleasure." He said, "Never, ever offer me any garland that has not already been worn by Anda." Hare Krishna. Then Vishnu Chittar understood his daughter is not an ordinary person. What was her devotion? She wasn't even growing the flowers. All she did is just take something that somebody else did and just put it on and look in the mirror. But because she did that with nothing but the desire to please Vishnu, because she in her heart, Krishna sees our hearts, he sees our purpose, he sees our intentions. The Lord saw within Andal that she had surrendered her body, mind, words, life. And she was putting the garland on just to be beautiful, to give pleasure to Krishna. No one else. That was her love, just to be beautiful for Krishna's pleasure. When she was looking in the mirror, this is what Krishna's seeing, and he's going to be so happy. This is what he wants. And he accepted that as pure love. And being blessed by the Lord, Vishnu Chittar, when it came to her being married, who could possibly marry somebody like this? And she said, "I've already given my heart to God. I can only marry him." Now, you ladies, don't try to imitate this. Deep down in your hearts, this is the way you should be. But as far as living in this material world, don't imitate great souls. Just try to understand the spirit of their hearts.
She was, her father recognized, and he said, I will, well, there's many different forms of Krishna that have appeared, Vishnu. So he read from Ramanujacharya's the various primary deities that he had established and that he had recognized, and she was, he was reading various, and when he spoke the name Ranganath, he saw Andal, a total transformation in her whole body. And then he was thinking, now what? The biggest, most prestigious temple in all of India. The Ranganath temple, and my daughter wants to marry Ranganath? He didn't know what to do. So the deity of Ranganath spoke to the head priest. I want to marry this girl in this village. Her name is Antal. Send a procession to bring her to me. And the procession arrived at their little village, at his little hut near his garden. And she was brought, and she went on the altar, and she went to Ranganath's lotus feet. And he gazed upon her with such love, and she gazed upon him with such love, and her body entered into the body of Ranganath. She wrote so many beautiful poems of her longing and yearning for Krishna, very much in the mood of the gopis. And Krishna gave her entrance into his eternal pastime. This is how Vishnu Chitar was profoundly, and it all began, this whole Leela that we were just speaking, the seed of it was just his inspiration by hearing about Sudama. He wanted to follow in Sudama's footsteps. After giving those blessings to Sudama, Krishna continued with his friends walking through the streets of Mathura. And it is described that the people of Mathura, when they saw Krishna, they were just so happy. Ladies, the Bhagavatam describes, and our acharyas describe some details, that people heard that Krishna and Balaram had come from Vrindavan to Mathura. And just because they had heard the leelas of Krishna, and because they were very, very pure-hearted people, they were so eager to see Krishna. People were running to the streets, they were running to the rooftops just to have a glimpse of Krishna. Some of the ladies of Mathura, they had pure hearts. When they heard that Krishna and Balaram were there, they were yearning to see them. They were yearning to give their lives to him. And like the gopis, they gave up everything they were doing just for Krishna. Some were cooking. They didn't even turn off the fires. They just went to see Krishna, to offer their glances, their flowers, their hearts to Krishna. Others were breastfeeding their little baby children. They gently put their babies down and ran to see Krishna. Some ladies were getting married. They were sitting with their husbands. The kanyadan and all of these Brahmins chanting mantras, everything's happening. They're right in the middle of this very, very
profoundly important part of their life, getting married.
And they just got up. Fathers in the middle of Kanyadan, they just got up to see Krishna. Left, disappeared. Others were, during the marriage ceremony, circumambulating their husbands. And just when they started the circumambulation, they just left. They disappeared.
The husbands, the priests, the family.
Some of them were taking their baths. And they didn't even dry themselves off. They just put on some cloth and ran. Others,
I just came from an Ayurvedic place, so, you know, they put oils all over your body.
And after the oils, you take bath. Some of them had just covered their bodies with oils, not like perfume oils, just oils for, you know, health and stuff. And when they heard that Krishna was there in the streets of Mathura, they didn't even bathe. They just went. This was their anticipation. This was their eagerness, their lalyam, to offer themselves to Krishna. And because of that eagerness, when they actually saw Krishna, their eyes became like fully blossomed lotus flowers. They couldn't even blink. They were just gazing upon Krishna. And Krishna was looking up in the rooftops and saw them and gazed upon them. They were showering Krishna with their love in the form of their glances. And with their whole hearts, they were totally absorbed in the perfection of samadhi. Samadhi siddhir ishvara pranidhanat. The great sage Patanjali in his Yoga Sutras, he explains the perfection of samadhi is to surrender to Ishvara. Ishvara Paramakrishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadiradir Govinda Saravakarana Karanam. And the highest realization of Ishvara is Satchidananda Vigraha, Krishna, who is the source and the cause of all causes. They surrendered. And there's a beautiful description by Shukadeva and Srimad Bhagavatam of how the ladies and the men, everyone, they were showering flowers upon Krishna and Balaram and the gopas as they were walking through the roads of Mathura. So these verses give Shastric authenticity to the Pushyabhishek festival. If anyone asks, where does this come from? So many places. Practically every time Krishna liberated an asura in Vrindavan, the demigod showered flowers on him. And now in Mathura, everyone was showering flowers upon him with love. Shall I continue? I'm your servant. The Brahmins, as Krishna was walking through the streets, they were offering barley and rice and various ingredients and fragrances and sandalwood pulp mixed with camphor and saffron and aguru and musk, and they were offering so many wonderful things to Krishna. Everyone was offering according to their capacity to celebrate Krishna's coming to Mathura. It was beautiful. And Krishna asked, where is this famous bow that I've heard about?
Oh, the bowl. This bowl was a gigantic bowl. Formidable. Nobody could even lift it up. It was Kamsa's bowl. Not that he ever used it, but this bowl was worshipped by Kamsa in a beautiful mandir arena. He would have sacrifices and pujas for this bowl. So Krishna, as if he was like a tourist, I want to see that bowl. And they said, oh, the bowl is here? He said, yes, let's go to see the bowl. So Krishna went with his little friends, the Gopas and Balaram, and there were guards against around this bowl. And when they saw a little cowherd boy coming, they said, you cannot come in. You are not entitled to come in. Krishna just pushed them all around. Just pushed them away. And all these police and military came to stop him. He just pushed them away. And then right in front of so many people, he lifted up the bow. And then he strung the bow. And then he pulled the string and he broke the bow. But everyone clapped much louder for Krishna. Those claps were to honor Krishna's breaking of the bow. But it made such a loud noise. You know, my noise has not gone beyond these room, even with a sound system. But when Krishna broke that bow, Maharaj, let us welcome His Holiness Sri Govinda Maharaj to our temple. Very honored, very grateful. He's one of the senior leading worshipable disciples of His Divine Grace Srila Bhakti Vaibhav Puri Maharaj, who is one of Srila Prabhupada's dearest godbrothers and best friends. Let us very enthusiastically welcome Govinda Maharaj. Thank you. With your permission, I continue. Thank you. Where did I leave off? Krishna broke the bow. Huh? Yeah, the sound was, it was millions of times louder and more resonating than thunder. And Kamsa heard it. And he understood. Krishna just broke the bow. I can't even lift the bow. And Krishna broke it. So while people were celebrating, Kamsa was in complete anxiety. And then Krishna went back to his friends and with the cowherd man, and he went to take rest. And while he was taking, Mother Yashoda, she actually sent some of the best milk from the best cows of Braj Bhumi. In little pot with Nanda Maharaj to give Krishna. So Krishna drank the milk with Balaram and his friends. And then they blissfully just went to sleep. But Nanda Maharaj couldn't sleep because as in his Vatsalya Ras, in his fatherly affection, he's thinking, tomorrow there's this wrestling festival and Kamsa's going to be there. And Krishna just broke Kamsa's worshipped bow. Kamsa's going to be very angry. What's going to happen to my Krishna tomorrow? He asked Krishna, why did you break that bow? That was Kamsa's bow. That was just, it was unnecessary. Why did you do that? And Krishna just smiled and went to sleep. Kamsa was in so much fear. He was totally absorbed in thinking of Krishna with hatred, envy, and fear. He couldn't forget Krishna. He was so much immersed in Krishna, he couldn't even sleep. And when he did kind of fall asleep, he just had dreams of Krishna. And then he got up. And he was thinking, what's happening to me? What's happening to me? All I could do is think of Krishna, and I'm seeing all these bad things. In his dream, he saw that he was being carried away by donkeys. He saw abominable creatures coming to get him. He saw ghosts torturing him while he was thinking of Krishna. So he got up. What's happening to me? He looked in the mirror. He saw his body, but there was no head. He was cleaning the mirror. Can you imagine? With his eyes, he's looking, but he's not seeing eyes, he's not seeing a head. Then he turned away from the mirror, and he looked at his shadow, and he saw holes in his shadow. He considered these things very inauspicious. He looked up at the sky, and he saw two moons. And he saw every star was double. And he looked at the trees and they were gold. Did you ever see a gold leaves and gold trees? Everywhere he looked, he was totally absorbed in fear and hatred, thinking of Krishna. And Narada Muni, he explained to Yudhisthira Maharaj the glory of Kamsa. Because it is explained that the conclusion of all the instructions and all the philosophical explanations and all of the leelas of all the scriptures of all the world is to bring us to fulfill two instructions. To always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. And Narada Muni said, Kamsa is actually better than me. So is Shishupal. Shishupal was always remembering Krishna in envy. Kamsa was always remembering Krishna in fear and hatred. The gopis in passionate love. And somehow or other, because they were always remembering Krishna, they all became purified. So now Kamsa was making every possible arrangement. And the next day, we're just about to come to the verse of today. The wrestling festival. Kamsa made every arrangement to make sure Krishna was killed. He very systematically, strategically planned. There's something called strategic planning. If it's done for Krishna's pleasure, it's a glorious thing. But He was a master at strategic planning, but he had the wrong motive. Chanura and Mustika were the universe champion wrestlers. They weren't just wrestlers. They were mystics. They had such power. And they were going to wrestle against Krishna and Balaram. But Kamsa didn't even want that to even come to that stage. He put Kuvalayapida, the most powerful elephant in the world, who was actually bloodthirsty and cruel, at the front gate with the purpose of killing Krishna. So Krishna and his friends, they come. Meanwhile, Kamsa's sitting there. It's supposed to be a festival. He's making it look like it's something very, very pleasing to everyone. Everything was decorated. There was like a stadium. And he had his chief ministers, and he had other kings and other princes. And then he had a little section for Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men. And Vasudeva and Devaki had their seats. And everyone was waiting. And Nanda Maharaj was welcomed by Kamsa. Oh, you have come. Here is your seats. Special seats I arranged just for you. Nanda Maharaj, thank you very much. And Nanda Maharaj was thinking, what's happening? Krishna hasn't even come. Everybody's here, and Krishna hasn't showed up. Kamsa's really going to be angry with Krishna. But Krishna was very, very, he knew exactly. He wanted to increase Kamsa's intestine condition. And when he came to the gate, blocking Krishna's path was Kuvalayapida. This enormous elephant who was making all these very, very fearful elephant sounds. Everyone, be like elephant sound. Huh? Nobody can do me. You sound like mice. Anyways, he was roaring. And then the elephant trainer who was on top of him, the Mahout, he had this spear and he was poking Kuvalaya, kill him, kill him. And Kuvalayapida just roared with eyes red like coals. In anger, and charged at Krishna. And then with his massive trunk, he wrapped it around Krishna's delicate little waist and picked Krishna up. And Krishna, with his soft little tender lotus hand, he gently punched the trunk of Kuvalayapida. And then, because it kind of hurt Kuvalayapida, Krishna slipped out of the trunk and jumped to the ground. The elephant now was even more angry. He was going to squeeze Krishna to death and start smashing him against the ground and the rocks and everything. But now Krishna slipped out. And he went to try to pick up Krishna again. But Krishna was hiding behind his legs. He was looking for Krishna, and he'd see Krishna, and Krishna would hide behind another leg, and he couldn't see. So he'd move his leg, and he'd see Krishna, and he'd go to grab Krishna, and Krishna would hide behind another one of his legs. Then he would move again and see Krishna, and this was going on. Everybody was watching. Then Kuvalayapida was running in circles trying to get Krishna, and finally, again, he captured Krishna with his trunk. He was about to smash Krishna down, and Krishna slipped out of his trunk again and went to the ground, started doing circles around Kuvalayapida. And Kuvalayapida was doing circles trying to catch Krishna, and somehow or other, Krishna got behind him. and pulled his tail.
Now, this is really humiliating for a, for a big elephant like this.
And not only did he pull his tail, he pulled him, he dragged him and started dragging him in zigzag ways, like just like he used to pull the tails of little calves when he was a baby in Vrindavan. And Kuvalayapita was like helplessly being dragged around by Krishna. He dragged him 20 bow lengths, which according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was about 100 hand lengths. And in Dwapara Yuga, people had big hands. So Krishna pulled and was just playing with him. And then he let him go. And now, the elephant's anger was so burning hot to kill Krishna. And he went charging toward Krishna, who was just standing there, not even moving, and with his massive tusks, he shot toward Krishna, who was on the ground. And Kuvalayapita is really big up there, and Krishna's just little down on the ground. And Krishna just slightly moved, and Kuvalayapita's tusks went deep, deep, deep right into the ground. And when he finally got his tusks out of the earth, he was even more angry. And Krishna just, it describes at this point, very gently, Krishna slapped him in the face. And he was, that was really an insult. Now try to picture this. This elephant is really big, like probably as big as this temple room, if not more. And Krishna's just a little cowherd boy. It was an incredible sight. And Krishna kind of flipped him over and pulled out his tusk. And Kuvalayapita was liberated. And his trainer, who was on top of him, kind of got crushed by his own. And then Krishna, very lovingly, with the tusk, he put it over his shoulder. And Balaram took the other one and put it over his shoulder. And they decorated by dust and spotted with some of the auspicious blood of the elephant. And they finally entered into the wrestling arena where everyone was eagerly awaiting. And they all saw Krishna. Shukadeva Goswami tells how everyone saw Krishna according to their consciousness. To the ladies of Mathura, they were seeing, because they had such loving hearts, they were seeing Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was Kamadev. Now there's Kamadev in this world, who is the source of all attraction, sensual attractions. But Krishna is the supreme Kamadev. He attracts the love of the soul. They were seeing him as the supreme ultimate beauty that's the attraction of every heart. And great Brahmins were seeing him as the Yajna Purusha. He's the ultimate goal and purpose of all the yajnas that we're doing. And many yogis, they were seeing him as the absolute truth, the Paramatma, the Parabrahman, the ultimate goal of yoga. And Nanda, Vasudev, Devaki, they were seeing him as their son. And they were remembering him when he was a little baby Isn't that the way parents see their children? You know better than me. I never had children. But I'm 63 years old. My father's 90 years old. And when I talk to him, you know, when he looks at me, he sees me when I was just born. He remembers me as an infant who was like, I didn't even, you know, I couldn't walk, I couldn't talk, and he and my mother were taking care of me. I was totally dependent on them. He still sees me that way. So I guess that's the way parents are. They were seeing Krishna, loving him as he was, but still they can't separate from the little baby that they protected and nourished and loved. So that is how Vasudeva Devaki, they saw Krishna as a little baby, and that's the last time they saw him. They hadn't seen him since he was just born. And Nanda and Yashoda was seeing Krishna throughout his childhood as a little child. At the same time, the wrestlers, Janara and Mustika, they were looking at the Krishna and Balaram. To the people of Mathura, they were seeing his limbs were so soft and so gentle and so sweet. But the wrestlers saw that they were like two thunderbolts. Almighty, all-powerful. And when Kamsa saw Krishna, he saw him as death personified. So some were being thrilled with love, some were being thrilled with concern, some were being thrilled with fear. According to how we approach Krishna, Krishna reveals himself accordingly. Some will see the deity as wood or stone. Some will see the deity as some idol worship, which is detrimental to true religion. Some will see the deity as someone to ask for material benedictions from. And maybe I'll be lucky and get something. Some see the deity as the means by which I can attain pure devotional service. Some will see the deity as the object in which, if I offer my heart and my life will be perfect. And some will see the deity as Srimati Radharani and Krishna. Rupa Goswami talks about his deity, Govindaji. He said, if you want to maintain your attachments to your body, your wealth, your home, your family, your society, if you want to maintain attachments to all these things, do not go to the bank of the Yamuna near Keshigat, because there you will see Govinda. And once you see Govinda, Gopinath, then he will attract your heart. And you can perform all your duties in this world, but it will no longer be with illusion or greed. When we actually see Krishna and Radha as they truly are, when they reveal themselves, then our only desire is like Sudama. Let me love you, serve you, please you. Let me be friends with your devotees. And let me be an instrument of your compassion for all people in this world. And similarly, Krishna is in his name. According to how we approach the name, Krishna is going to reveal himself. Krishna revealed himself in so many different ways according to people's particular consciousness and desire. And in today's verse, as they were looking at Krishna,
The people seem to be drinking Krishna and Balaram with their eyes. Did you ever drink anything with your eyes? This is transcendental. You know, usually we think of drinking like water. It's not that we should start pouring water in our eyes. What that means is when you're really thirsty, what does water taste like? Similarly, their eyes were thirsting to see Krishna. They were because they were thirsting to see Krishna, when they finally did see him, they were drinking him with their eyes, unsatiated. Licking with their tongues, smelling with their nostrils, and embracing with their arms. Reminded of the Lord's beauty, character, charm, and bravery, the members of the audience began describing these features to one another according to what they had seen and heard. Machchita matkata purana bodhyanta parasparam. Katiyan, what is it? Katiyastam nityam tushyanti charamanti cha. When we surrender our hearts, our lives to Krishna, when we taste Krishna ourselves, then our greatest happiness and pleasure is sharing our realizations of Krishna with each other. This is true happiness, speaking about Krishna with each other. Yes, I know there's a lot of talk about the coming elections. And even devotees are talking about it a lot. You know, I mean, we have our partialities towards certain parties, no doubt. But at the same time, these things are ever changing. We may discuss these things for whatever purposes, but our joy is to share with each other the eternal ras of Krishna. This is true Vaishnava community. To always be reminding each other of Krishna. To read about Krishna. To hear about Krishna in classes. And then to discuss these things with each other. The residents of Mathura, they heard about Krishna. They were seeing Krishna. And now they were all talking about Krishna with each other. Harikatha. And that's... So this is the verse we've come to today. So we have two choices. Either I could begin class or end class. I will take that as your message to end class. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much.